Welcome to this week's episode of Bored Women. I'm the founder, Caroline Keelock, and in every episode, I speak to women in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond who are picking up board sports to increase their confidence.
It would be hard to look back and say you didn't at least try. And if all I ever do is just go up and down a little ramp and back and do a few turns, that will be such a joy for me.
I'm so excited because this week our guest is Jo Mosley, who's particularly known for paddleboarding coast to coast in England after only having picked up the sport in her 50s. And most recently, Jo's decided that she's going to pick up a skateboard and try that too. So first of all, welcome to the Bored Women podcast, Jo. It's really lovely to have you on.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a huge honour to be on.
Oh, that's lovely. I should say how I know you, because I normally give a little bit of an introduction about this. And I think, in fact, you got in touch with me on Instagram on Bored Women because you just started your skateboarding journey. Mm-hmm. And I just thought you were another lovely person kind of getting in contact saying, oh, this community's great. And then I looked you up and was like, oh my God, this woman's amazing. Oh. And, you know, read your story of having paddleboarded coast to coast in your 50s and immediately felt we just had to get you on and hear a bit about your story.
Oh, thank you. That's very, very kind.
So we'll give the listeners a bit more of an introduction about you, but we ask everyone who comes on the show the same question. Mm. And that question is, when did you last fall?
So it wasn't quite a fall, but it was one of those things when a couple of weeks ago I was at the skate park and I was trying to push off and the board went and my legs went and I went into a sort of split situation, if you know what I mean.
I do know so, what you mean.
It was a bit like, whoa. So yeah, I felt it for quite a while, I'll have to say. So I didn't hit the ground, but it all just went. My legs went in very different directions.
Unfortunately, getting into skateboarding, the falling part of it is somewhat inevitable.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm all, you know, I have, I need to get hip pads. I just saw Auntie Skates in Canada, I think she is, where she'd said about hip pads. So I need to get those. But everything else, I'm completely padded up. So, yeah.
Yeah, hip pads. I don't wear hip pads, but I do know that nearly everyone I know who starts skating later on in life, it is their hips that definitely get the bashing.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm 59, so I just need to protect everything I can.
I feel you. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, why you're here and what your story is. So Can you tell us first how you got into paddleboarding and how your coast-to-coast challenge came to life?
So I started paddleboarding on the 24th of September 2016, to be precise, in the Lake District. Basically, I'd injured my leg earlier in the year and it had really, you know, put a damper on my spirits. And so I set myself a little challenge at the beginning of September of that year to spend 30 minutes outdoors every day just doing something active. And so my 24th of September was a paddleboarding lesson. And I just thought this sounded really good fun. I'd always wanted to be a surfer, but I had figured that I was maybe too old and not cool enough to be a surfer. And so I took a paddleboarding lesson and I always say that for the first time in months, I felt like a warrior, not a worrier. You know, I just felt amazing. I just felt amazing. And I thought, wow, I couldn't stop smiling as we went home. And yeah, it just was wonderful. And a couple of months later, so this was 2016, I had the idea to paddleboard from Liverpool to Leeds. So that's 128 miles. I told a few people. They told me it sounded really boring, logistically difficult and too difficult for a woman of my age. That I was only 52 at the time. But instead of saying, yeah, whatever, and going on with it, I actually allowed their opinion of me and the route to put me off. And it was 3 years later that I decided, as a result of two things, one, that my youngest son was going to university, and as a single mum, I'd be a sort of Joey No Mates empty nester. And also that I'd lost a number of girlfriends who had died and only one of them had reached 50. And I thought, life is too short and too precious not at least to have a go. That's something that really drives me. And so in 2019, I thought, right, I'm going to go from Liverpool to Leeds and then on to Goole. So as coast to coast as you can, 162 miles. And that's why I did it. And I was fundraising and picking up litter.
Aren't the dissenting voices just so bloody annoying?
Yeah.
I mean...
yeah, they are. And I got some on the canal. Even when I was sort of halfway across the country, people would say I couldn't do it. Or that I was going to fall in and then I was going to get some terrible disease. And yeah, they are. And I think that when I now decided I wanted to learn to skateboard, I didn't get any dissenting voices because I think everybody knew that I wasn't going to listen to them this time. So
when you heard that, particularly when you were midway through your journey, what fueled you on during those times? Because it's not the best, is it, to hear people
it's not
just
the
having
best.
Such a negative train of thought.
It's not the best. And in our film, Brave Enough, that we made about it, I can see my reaction then was I sort of joked and I said, look, you know, people have said, how far have you come? So I, at one point, this chap said, how far have you come? And I said, oh, about 80 miles. And he said, yeah, in your dreams. And I was like, well, I have, I promise. And I think there was still a residual element of trying to please and trying to say, I promise you, I have done it, as though I needed his approval. But now looking back, I wish that I just said, well, I have, mate, you know, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
and maybe that comes with age, age and experience of people sort of telling you that you can't do things and realizing, well, I'm going to be 60 at the end of this year. If I keep listening to people telling me that I can't do something, I'm just going to stop doing all sorts of things. And so it was a really good lesson in just building my own self-belief and saying, well, I might be rubbish at this. Like, I might be the world's worst skateboarder, but at least I gave myself the chance to try. And that has become really important to me.
When you first took up paddleboarding, what made you want to take on a specific challenge? Because lots of people might have taken up paddleboarding and just decided to start going every weekend and make it a regular part of their life.
Yeah, I asked myself that too. You know, when you take up paddleboarding, why did you then paddle across the country, make a film, launch a podcast and write two books? You know, I could have just gone and had a fun time. And I get that. And I think looking, you know, I think there's the bit of the Capricorn in me. There's a sort of middle child syndrome, you know, all that sort of girl of the 70s trying to having to prove herself the whole time. And I think there are some elements of that. But I think I also, when I did decide to do it, it was very much because of two things. One, I wanted to show my boys I would be okay. You know, as a single mum, I wanted them to know that I would have these adventures. So I wasn't going to be that mum who was going to be on the phone the whole time saying, you know, what are you doing? What are you having for your tea? Whilst they were off, you know, leading their lives. And also losing those girlfriends, all of whom were really interesting, courageous, creative women. And they, you know, some I'd known since I was about 17, some were schoolgate mums. So there was a real span of how deep our friendship was. But I knew that I couldn't change anything about their deaths, obviously. But I just felt if I could honour their creativity in some way and just make a difference, then I would be just, you know, grabbing life and showing that you're not too old, it's not too late, but that life really is so precious that if you want to do something, have a go. And they were all the kind of women that would do that. You know, they were just so giving and so generous. And I wanted to honour them, I suppose.
I read a couple of pieces about this journey and also obviously watched the film. And there's some moments where you talk about, that's right, it's a lovely film and we'll talk about it in a bit more detail. But there's a couple of moments where you refer to having anxiety on steroids, or being on the bathroom floor crying during that period.
Yeah.
So can you talk to that a little bit? What was going on?
Yeah. So I probably around, gosh, it seems so long ago, but about 10 years ago, I guess, I started having symptoms of the perimenopause. And weirdly, 10 years ago, nobody even used the term perimenopause.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what was happening. I was deeply anxious, completely overwhelmed by life. I burst into tears in Tesco's just saying to the boys, I can't do this. And I don't know what I can't do this meant, but it was just like life was so overwhelming. I wasn't sleeping. I had aching joints. I would burst into tears at any moment or fly off the handle with them or forget things. I had itchy skin, my eyes, heart palpitations, and I had no idea what was going on. And both mum and dad were going through chemotherapy at the time. My dad's had breast, bowel and skin cancer, and my mum was being treated for lymphoma, and she subsequently died in 2013. And so I had no idea it was this thing called the perimenopause or it had anything to do with my hormones. I just thought I was a, you know, busy single mum. And paddleboarding really had helped that hugely. It gave me a chance to escape from just the kind of grind of life. Obviously, I deeply love being a mum, but there also is a grind that we have to, I think we have to acknowledge as well. And it was just gave me a chance to escape and enjoy, you know, a couple of hours on the water.
So there's a lovely quote that you give in the film where you talk about my heart's bigger and my opportunities are bigger.
Mm.
And it really felt like you were having this awakening during the film of there being a bigger world out there for you. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And I remember exactly where I said it. And when I said it, it was the penultimate day. We had just done a litter pick and I knew that the next day it was going to finish. And I did genuinely just feel like I had lived, my life had really become quite small and quite fearful. Divorced, single mum, you know, losing my own mum, dad being poorly. And I just had become quite scared of life and really limited my possibilities. And so, yeah, I remember standing there and just saying, yeah, I think life, I just do feel there's more possibilities and that maybe I just don't need to be so scared of what might go wrong, I guess.
Talk me through one of the moments that really struck me was the very first day you set off and it was just the worst possible weather known to man, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And what did that feel like? Because I can imagine going into that with all this enthusiasm and just wanting to kind of get going.
Yeah.
And it's like the world's just tossed you the worst weather day that it ever could have done. How did you feel setting
off? Well, it's really funny because I've always imagined that people set off adventures with, you know, people cheering them from the beach or the canal side, and it was gonna, and it was so not like that. So the Leeds Liverpool Canal starts in a residential housing area. Literally, you've got pavement and then you've got the canal. There was a lot of geese and a lot of geese poo. It was raining. Two friends very unexpectedly turned up, which was lovely. And another friend said she was going to come and she was late. And we were like, should we go? Should we not? Because it'd be quite nice for the film to have more than one person there waving me off. It rained and rained and rained. The first thing anybody said to me was, watch out for the dead bodies in the canal, which was very exciting.
Super helpful.
There were some children who I think were smoking some, teenagers, not children, who are smoking something they probably shouldn't have been smoking under the bridge and sort of laughing at me. I was so excited I forgot to eat, which is very unusual for me. I forgot to drink. When I arrived at the pub where I was sleeping that night, I dropped my very brand new phone because I was so dehydrated and wobbly. It couldn't have been a less interesting adventure beginning, but that's what life is. And I guess you don't have to wait until it's perfect just to say, right, I'm going to do this. And it turned out to be the most amazing 11 days. And I'm quite glad that we started at a very low point.
I can't even imagine that, just like the smell of weed as you set off, all the glamour.
Yeah.
All the glamour.
Yeah.
There's a moment in the film where you realise that you'd gone the wrong way and you'd unwittingly added to the mileage that you didn't have to do. How did you feel in that moment?
Broken, stupid, like all the things anyone's ever said to me about not being able to do this adventure and not being able to get to the other side were coming true. And just incredibly like, well, this is it. This just proves I can't do this. This just proves this is too difficult for me, because all along people would say, well, at least on a canal, you can't go the wrong way. You just need to point towards Leeds. And I was like, yeah, that's so funny. Ha ha. Of course I won't go the wrong way. But what happened was I stopped, picked up litter. The wind blew me round. I didn't look where I was going and I started heading back to Liverpool. And when I realised, I just felt so stupid. And I kept having to say to myself something that I'd heard on the radio you know, just prior to setting off, which was, I've made a mistake, I'm not a mistake. And I think my natural inclination when something goes wrong is to catastrophize and say, and I think the menopause adds to this, it's my natural inclination that the 100%. Menopause, you know, the menopause just doubles, triple, you know, it's catastrophization on steroids. And it's like, I had to keep saying to myself, you've made a very simple mistake. You are not a mistake. You can do this. You can keep on doing it. Just turn around. And it was a crucial point in self-talk and being kind to myself. I think we're all incredibly hard on ourselves. And it was a really interesting point that I often refer to it like in my head, which is, okay, this isn't working out, but you can resolve this. And it doesn't mean that you're like a bad person or a bad mother or a failed person or a failed this. You just made a mistake. You just need to pick yourself up and carry on again.
Was self-talk an issue during it? Because I think one of the things about paddleboarding is it's quite solitary, isn't it? It's very peaceful as a result when you're going along. But there's also no escape either, because it's not so active or scary that your mind can't go at the same time, if you know what I mean. There's a peace to it. There's a flow. But I imagine your brain and your mind is going all the time.
Yeah.
So how did you find that during the period?
Yeah, so I was doing it on my own. Obviously, a lot of people do paddleboard with others, but I was very much doing it on my own. And it's interesting because your mind can wander. And that's where it's different to skateboarding for me so far, because when I'm such a beginner with skateboarding, and the very few times that I've surfed, but mainly injured myself when I've surfed, you can't think of anything else. Like, you just can't. Otherwise, I'll fall. You know, for me with my skateboarding, I cannot let my mind wander. I have to focus 100%. And I love that, because for 2 hours, my mind is like this white blank canvas. It's wonderful. And
all
the chattering goes. There's no, oh, you should have done this. And oh, have you done that? Nothing.
Yeah,
it's so mindful. It's like you come out like you've done a 20-hour meditation, what I imagine it would be like to do a 20-hour meditation. Whereas paddleboarding, it's still, and particularly on a canal, you haven't got waves, you haven't got, it's not like you're on a river and you've got to think about the flow. It's a very calm, steady state. Your mind can wander. So there was an awful lot of self-talk, a lot of thinking about the future, thinking about what I was doing, reminding myself that I could do it. Yeah, I started and finished different people. Genuinely, a different person, yeah.
Did you listen to music as you went, or was it all just the noises of your surrounds?
Yeah, no, I didn't. Just simply because you can have canal boats, narrow boats come up behind you. And because I am a tiny bit of a Dolly Daydream, I knew that if I got into a podcast, I could quite easily find myself in another little, you know, bubble and forget that there was a narrow boat behind me. So I wanted to keep my wits about me. But also I knew that if I listened to a podcast or a book on my headphones, I would lose myself in that, and I wouldn't have the sort of wherewithal to chat to people on the canal path. And I wanted to do that as well. So I wanted to be very present to everything that was going on around me.
I imagine that must have been one of the most challenging elements, though. I was listening to an adventure podcast this morning about this woman and her partner, where they went and lived in the wilds of New Zealand with nothing for like 7 years. It's really amazing. I'll send you the episode.
Please do.
But she said that one of the most challenging aspects at the beginning was learning to do nothing and have nothing and where your mind wandered. And she said it took a good 2 months for her brain to quieten down enough to be happy in that existence.
Yeah.
And then it takes her one day of being back in a city or in a more traditional environment for it to speed right back up again.
Yeah.
And then another 2 months for it to slow. So I just imagine that part of your brain being so available to you all the time is actually really hard.
Yeah, it is. But there is also a real pleasure in that all I had to do was literally, you know, eat, sleep, paddle, pick up litter, and then, as I say in the film, tweet, because I used Twitter. It was sort of the good old days of Twitter, to share the journey, to help with the fundraising. And that's all I had to do. Whereas if you think about it in my daily life, I was thinking, you know, how's dad? How are the boys? Have I, you know, what do I need to do in the house? What do I need to do in my job? All those other things. And for 11, 12 days, I didn't have to think about any of those things. I mean, there were times I was having a little WhatsApp conversation with my sons and my sister, but generally all I had to do was focus on a very few number of things. And most women, and I know that's a cliche, but most women in general never give their brains that freedom just to calm down and focus on so few things. So it was like a holiday for my brain, really.
That sounds really inviting right now, I have to say.
Yeah, exactly.
And since doing the challenge, you've definitely become a voice in, you know, various outdoor and menopausal, postmenopausal communities about aging differently.
Yeah.
And actually, I have to tell you, I did a skate event this weekend and I had a woman in her 50s who followed you online and came to my skate event because she'd seen you start skateboarding, which is really lovely.
Gosh, that's so
amazing. That kind of connection's really inspiring.
Oh,
but
wow.
How has all of this experience changed your outlook about aging and new opportunities that might come your way?
I think it's made me braver. That, you know, that's the name of the film. And also I've realised that you don't have to be like super brave. You just have to be brave enough to take the next step, you know. Exactly with my skateboarding journey. It's like, you know, I watch all these amazing women on Instagram and think, oh my gosh, they're so, you know, many of the people that you've had on your podcast, and I, you know, they're out there doing amazing things, and I'm like, okay, you're on your own journey. You just have to be brave enough to take the next step and then the next step. And I think it's just opened me up to possibility, like we said at the beginning, just the possibility that something might be different. Is there a possibility that in my 60s I can be aging in a different way than I thought I would be aging when I was 20, when I thought, oh, by my 60s I'll be wearing kind of beige elasticated waist trousers and, you know, very smart cardigans, all of which are really lovely, don't get me wrong, but, you know, and sometimes I think, oh, I could just do with some elasticated waist trousers. But also it's just the possibility to look at life differently and think, well, do I want to go down this path or do I want to go down this path? And I think all of it has just really reinforced gratitude to be well. You know, I'm 59 and I'm in good health. I'm lucky enough to be doing what I'm doing. So there's a huge sense of gratitude for aging well as well.
So how does learning to skateboard fit within that journey? Talk us through where that came from and why you started and how.
So by the end of sort of autumn of last year, I'd done the bulk of this second book, and I was feeling, you know, excited but also relieved. It's a huge amount of work. And I guess I felt like I needed, I was in all honesty feeling like a bit exhausted, and I wanted to do something that I had no understanding of, if that makes sense. I wanted to start as a beginner again. And also with my 60th coming up this year, I thought, what are the things that you want to do in life or have always wanted to do? And which of them are possible? Like, I'm never going to be able to say, oh, I've had a 40-year-old, you know, a 40-year marriage, because I'd have to be married now. You know what I mean? That's not a possibility. I'm never probably going to be, not that I've ever wanted to go to the moon, but, you know, there are certain things are just realistically not going to happen. But what are the things you've always wanted to do that you can make happen? You know, what are they? And skateboarding was literally the first thing that came to mind, because I'd always wanted to learn to skateboard. You know, I was growing up in the 70s. My brother had a skateboard, but girls didn't skateboard. You know, there was no skate parks. There was nowhere that you could have a lesson. If you weren't very good, you just didn't do it. And it wasn't seen to be the thing that a girl, you know, from the north would do. And so skateboarding was the thing that I said, right, you can be a beginner, you can find a skate park in Leeds, you can invest in some lessons. And just the minute I just went for that very first lesson at LS10, I was just like, I love this. I'm rubbish at this and I totally love it. You know, I love it so much. And it was like going on holiday again. It was like I'd reinvigorated myself. And as I said, I love the fact that I go for 2 hours and I'm exhausted, but my brain feels like it's had the biggest break. You know, it's so lovely to have a whole 2 hours where it's not, you know, your little voice inside isn't whittering at you. All you have to do is like, you know, oh, I'm just going a tiny bit more up the ramp. Oh, You know, I mean, nothing that I do is any good, but it's so wonderful. I love it so much.
You messaged me near the beginning when you'd first started going to a beginner's night. And I remember you saying, no one seems like a beginner at the beginner's night. And the boards flying at me from all directions. And what's this about?
Yeah.
And how is that going? Are you feeling like you're finding your place in the skate park a bit now?
Yeah, I do. And tonight I'm going and... there's a little bit more confidence. I sort of just know. I think it was just that it's never happened before. I think I just was there when there were some people that weren't necessarily watching where their skateboard was going, and I was a bit fearful. But yeah, I do feel more confident, and you see the friendly faces. And I cannot, I mean, you know this, your listeners will know this, but I have been so moved by how supportive the skateboarding community is. Obviously board women, you know, your community is wonderful, but even just arriving at the skate park, you know, I remember one night arriving and there was a young boy that probably about 11, and he looked at me and he smiled, and I thought, oh my god, he's gonna laugh at me. And he didn't, he just said hi, you know what I mean? And I was like, and then there's like a little 8-year-old keeps coming up to me and going, would you like an opal fruit? No, I'm fine, thank you. Aww. And he's like, no, I insist you have a sweet. And then another little one, you know, they're all little to me, but, you know, I was putting my wrist pads on, and he said, and I was chatting to somebody at the same time, and he went, oops, you're putting it on the wrong way round. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Thank you for reminding me, you know, because I was distracted. And they'll sit and cheer, you know, you get, it's just so kind and so lovely. And I've really, I mean, if they were horrible, I think I would still probably stick at it. But the fact that they're so nice makes me feel like I want to go. I know I'm in a, I know it's a cliched word, but I know I'm in a sort of safe space where I can try and fall and try and fall, and people will go, that's great, you know, nobody is expecting. And I think, I can't remember, it was one of your podcasts or something where somebody said, nobody at the skate park asks you what you do for a living. Nobody is interested. They just say, oh, that's really good. Or, you know, push like this way or do this way. Or so, yeah, it's amazing.
I think the first time that somebody younger and exponentially better than you at skateboarding bangs their board in appreciation of something that you've done, even though it might be really basic, it's really heartwarming.
Yeah.
Just like, they totally get that for me, that was a massive advancement.
Yeah.
Even though for them, they could do that 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, they are excellent. But there's something really lovely about it. It's so nice.
Yeah. And you know, and I'm a mother of sons, and I remember what they were like at that age. And you know, and sometimes there's BMX bikes and scooters and things, and these kids are just, I mean, they are fearless, absolutely fearless. And I just stop and they'll sort of wait for me, and I'll say, no, you go ahead, you know, I don't want to get in your way. And I love it. I think it's a really force for good.
As you said earlier, there is a different mindset going into something like skateboarding, because you do have to be wholly concentrated in the moment.
Mm.
And there is a different level of confidence, I would say, versus paddleboarding in terms of the entry point.
Yeah.
How have you found that? Because it's an entirely different feeling with quite a lot more adrenaline, I would say.
Yes. I think there's a risk. There's always a risk. And, you know, I have friends who have fallen and had hip replacements, you know, obviously not skateboarding, you know, they had a slip on the ice. So I'm very aware that I am putting myself in a situation where I could hurt myself. But I also know that I do take as many precautions as I can, and that I'll never push myself to the point of doing anything silly. I come back to the same thing. I just have to give it a go, because it would be hard to look back and say you didn't at least try. And if all I ever do is just go up and down a little ramp and back and do a few turns, that will be such a joy for me. As long as I'm super careful and I completely, you know, I'm fully padded up, like, you know, then it's a risk I'm willing to take, as long as I minimize the risk as much as I possibly can, because I'm not stupid and I have responsibilities. I have two sons, I have my dad to look after. So I'm not going to do anything silly, but the risk of not trying seemed greater than the risk of possibly hurting myself, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does. Although it sucks you in, Joe, and there's all these things that you think you'll never try. And suddenly you're like, yeah, I'll give that a go. And then that's what happens. It's
yeah.
really addictive.
Oh, yeah.
You said at the start of this that you wanted to be a surfer, but you didn't feel like you were cool enough.
Yeah. Are you
reconsidering that or giving it more of a go?
No. So I spent about 2-3 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 now because of the pandemic, but I went to Wales to the Wave and I spent 3 to 4 days there, and I came away thinking, that was fun, but I'm not going to do that again. I came away, I'd hurt my finger. Then I went surfing in France on a little weekend trip, and I hurt my foot. I think I will stick to paddleboarding. It's amazing, don't get me wrong. And a lot of paddleboarders surf. I have a friend who called Heather Peacock, who is the most amazing sup surfer, and another couple of women who've been on my own paddleboarding podcast and in my book who are amazing, and I love watching them. But I think that paddleboarding and skateboarding is about all I can cope with, because I can see that, you know, both of them want time, and I don't want to spread my time too thinly.
Yeah, you don't want to dilute it.
No.
Your 60th is this year.
Yeah.
Are you tempted to commit to any other big challenges? Like, is that a moment of reconsideration?
Well, I want a little bit of a rest, because writing a couple of paddleboarding books, they do seem like big challenges. So maybe, I don't know. For the promotion of this second book, I'm going to walk around the Lake District and go from lake to lake and bookshop to bookshop and swim. So if, to me, although that would be very chilled, that will still be quite a big challenge, because I'm quite scared of heights. So I'm not really sure why I keep saying I'm going to go to the top of some fells. But after that, I don't know. We'll see. I think I would really like to devote a bit of time to my skateboarding rather than just have it as a sort of squeeze it in. So it might be that I don't want to just keep squeezing it in, and now the book's off to the hopefully to the printers this week, I want to devote a bit more time. My youngest son is going to be going to America to study, so I was saying to him, I'd like to bring my skateboard. My eldest son might be going abroad to work as well. I think I would really like to take my skateboard to different places and kind of tap into the communities. And, I'd love to do that. I mean, that would be amazing, just to sort of, you know, turn up and skate in different countries. So, yeah. But I want to devote to it. I don't want to just let it squeeze into cracks in my life. I actually want to make it a solid time that I devote to it.
It takes time as well.
Yeah.
Consistency and recency are the two big things, I think, particularly if confidence is part of it. It's
really
important.
Yeah.
What would you say to any other women who are, you know, maybe getting to later in life and questioning their ability to try something new? What advice would you give them?
I would say a few things. I would say, number one, just think of all the other things that you've done in life where you thought you couldn't do it and that you've found out that you could. And again, it's just, you know, if you're a mother, just think of the times that you brought your child home and you thought, what do I do with this? And suddenly, you know, they're 8, 10, 18 years old and they're still thriving, or a career or anything where you thought I couldn't do this and then you did. I would say, get some, you know, expertise. I think definitely in paddleboarding, that's massively important for safety. Have a lesson at least at the beginning. But with skateboarding, if I hadn't had the lessons with Denham, and I hope to invest in more over time, I wouldn't know what to do. But having it with Denham at LS10 has just given me that confidence to know there's a progressive, you know, progression that I can work along. So invest in yourself. But being a beginner is really lovely. I love being a beginner because it's like this whole big blank canvas ahead of me. And build a community. You know, I have so benefited from listening to your podcasts and just following and meeting people online. I think that is massively important. So I have this little community of people that I sort of nod to and say hello to at this skate park. But then, you know, I can just find all these women that I've listened to your podcasts or that have commented on your page and follow them and go, wow, look at them. It's so amazing. And just having that community, both in paddleboarding and in skateboarding, I think means a huge amount to women, that you're not alone and you've got people just cheering you on. I think that's massively important.
So finally, before we finish, because I know you've got lots of stuff to plug at the moment. So for anyone who hasn't read your first book, doesn't know about your second book, hasn't seen your films, give us a little rundown of everything that they should go and check out.
Oh, wow. Thank you. So I'm mainly on Instagram, and my Instagram handle is Jo Moseley. So that's JoMoseley. And that's my website as well, jomoseley.com. So I have one book about paddleboarding in Great Britain that came out 2 years ago. And I have a new book about paddleboarding in the Lake District, which is coming out in May, and a film called Brave Enough, A Journey Home to Joy, which you can rent or buy online, which is about the coast to coast, but a lot about being a mum and grief and anxiety and the menopause, but hopefully in quite a joyful way at the end as well. And there's a lot about litter picking too. So that's who I am.
So that was my interview with Jo. There were two points that really struck me in that interview, which I loved. The first was just repositioning this idea of being a beginner. I'm particularly somebody who chastises themselves for not having advanced as I want to, and the idea of seeing it as a blank slate of opportunity is really compelling. The second one is just simply normalising what we do in our 50s and coming to these sports and trying new things, rather than making it such an exceptional example. If you enjoyed this conversation, I would love it if you liked it, reviewed it, and also shared it with your friends, because it really does help get the podcast noticed. We've got this incredibly big vision for Board Women, and we'd love you to be part of it. So if you check out our upcoming events and how you can get involved, look at Board Women on Instagram and boardwomen.co. I'll be back in a couple of weeks when I'll be talking to Danny Unway. Danny is a psychotherapist, but she also specialises in surf coaching for confidence.